Okay, my talk will be about systematic constraining of molecular models by the inverse Monte Carlo. And I will not talk long about the necessity of constraining. You can see similar scheme on almost any talk on multiscale modeling. This is some other view on constraining. You have here a clear picture, and if you want to save computer resources, you can compress it. You see this picture without many of details, but anyway, it keeps the motif of this picture. And somebody can even like more this picture. And we do similar things we do when we are doing molecular constraining. We have here atomistic model of lipid, which may consist of more than 100 atoms. And if you want to simulate large system like vesicle formation and so, it will be too demanding task. And we reduce description of the system, do constraining, create a model of lipid consisting of, say, 10 sites, and then we're really able to simulate many thousands of lipids and simulate phenomena like vesicle formation or other. So in any such constraining scheme, we essentially need to do two things. First, we need to design our coarse grain mapping that specifies the important degrees of freedom which we want to keep in our coarse grain model. And this can be done in many ways, but in principle, there is no problem to do this. But more important problem is how we can specify the interaction potentials for the coarse grain degrees of freedom. And in the so-called bottom-up multiscale approach, we wish to derive this coarse grain potential from our atomistic or fine-grained potential. And actually, a solution for this problem is known. It is just n-body potential of mean force. So assume here our detail or fine-grained system with this number of degrees of freedom, and we do some mapping. We create coarse grain centers, and we define new coarse grain model. So we wish to write down effective potential for the coarse grain degrees of freedom. And usually for such coarse grain degrees of freedom, we select coordinates of center of mass of some atomic groups. So if you write down partition function, this is our fine grain partition function. And we introduce product of delta functions with our coarse grain mapping. And then we write potential in terms of the coarse grain coordinates only. It's some effective Hamiltonian, and expression for this effective Hamiltonian is available. And this is exact. This is effective n-body coarse grain potential, or it's also has a sense of the potential of mean force, or it is free energy of non-important degrees of freedom. So if we have this n-body potential, then in principle we reproduce all the structural properties of the coarse grain system if we take observable depending on the coarse grain coordinates, then its average will be the same in the fine grain and in the coarse grain system. Concerning thermodynamic, in principle we can reproduce even thermodynamical properties because Hamiltonians give the same partition function. But here already appears a problem that the constraint potential is generally temperature and volume dependence. And if we wish really to derive thermodynamic properties, we need to take into account this dependence. And concerning dynamics, it's even more complicated, but it also can be in principle approximated within Morris-Wanzek formalism. And for example, one way of doing this in DPD simulation is to compute DPD parameters from force covariance measured in atomistic molecular dynamics. But I will not talk about dynamics. So okay, at least for the structural equilibrium properties, the mean force potential and body and force potential produce exact solution. However, we cannot use really this potential in our simulation because it is n-dimensional function. we need to use to have something more usable, preferably just the sum of one-dimensional function. That's why instead of n-body potential of mean force, we wish to approximate it as a sum of pair potentials. And then the question arises, what is the best way to parameterize the n-body potential of mean force? And here, really, we have a number of methods developed through the years. We can think just to fit this expression, perhaps Boltzmann averaged, then we get energy matching approach. More known and is, of course, force matching approach, when we try to fit not the energy but the gradient, that is force. And this approach is developed in the group of Gregory Wirth. We can also try to minimize relative entropy, entropy coming from this expression and from atomistic system, and have Scott Shell, who developed this approach. And we can also think to make this fitting, reproducing the same canonical properties. First of all, radial distribution function. And then we come to inverse Monte Carlo method or iterative Boltzmann inversion. And actually, these approaches are in fact interconnected, that there is connection between them. But probably this will be discussed in other lectures by William Noyd or Scott Phil at this conference. So now I give just description of the inverse Monte Carlo approach, how it's formulated now and how it was formulated recently. So assume we have Hamiltonian which depend on the number of parameters which we wish to reconstruct. And we have M canonical average, just which we know from our detailed simulations. So in direct simulation, we start from the set of parameters. We in principle can compute averages. But now we need to solve the inverse problem. We have these averages computed in the detailed simulation. And we want to reconstruct the potential parameters. We can write down this evident expression on the change of averages of S alphas via this matrix of derivatives. And this matrix of derivatives expression for it can be written in terms of canonical averages, which can be computed if we run Monte Carlo or molecular dynamics simulation of the system, because we can write down explicit expression for all these derivatives. How Hamiltonian depend on parameters lambda, and also if estimator of average quantities so depend on alpha. No, no, it is just, it's not entropy. This is a canonical average. It's any canonical average. S alpha is estimator of this canonical average, and in brackets, it's average itself. So we know this matrix of derivatives, and then we can solve the inverse problem just by Newton-Raphson method. We start to choose some trail values. Run direct simulation, Monte Carlo or MD, calculate deviation, calculate also the matrix of derivatives, solve the system of linear equation, and obtain how should we change parameters in order to get desirable change of the observable properties. So this is exactly solution of nonlinear multidimensional equation by the Newton-Raphson method. And so this is how it's formulated in general form, but really it was used for the problem to reconstruct interaction potential from pair potentials. Then we can come to more simple expressions. So we consider Hamiltonians, which can be written in this form, where V alpha are parameters of the potentials, and S alpha some functions, which depends on atomic coordinates. And in fact, any pair potential can be presented in this form. We just present pair potential as a stepwise function, and then the total energy can be presented in this form, where V alpha is just value of the potential in each at each distance, and S alpha then is the number of particle pairs which have distance within this interval. And also this S alpha are estimator of radial distribution functions. So if you know radial distribution function, we know also averages as alpha. They are just connected by normalization equation. And for inversion matrix in the Newton inversion, we have this expression. So we essentially need to compute this cross correlation function in the inverse simulation. So in this way, we can reconstruct pair potential from radial distribution function. Some comments about this. Of course, you know there is a unique relationship between pair potentials and radial distribution function, a so-called Herdenson theorem. That's why you can say that the inverse problem in principle has unique solution. But in practice, the inverse problem is often ill-defined. That there are many cases when you have noticeably different potential, but they return almost the same radial distribution function. Often you cannot distinguish them on a graph because they are just overlapping with the thickness of line. Also, many times, as mentioned, often use another way to get effective potential which return given radial distribution function is the iterative Boltzmann inversion, which used this simple expression. And in fact, this, even if iterative Boltzmann inversion and inverse Monte Carlo, they target the same properties, for some system they really can wield different results. And this is mainly because the problem is maybe ill-defined, and just these two approaches use different algorithms. But iterative Boltzmann inversion may not completely converge, especially in multi-component case, which, for example, include ions. But still, it may be reasonable to use in the beginning of inverse Monte Carlo process, because the Newton scheme works well when we already close to the solution. And iterative Boltzmann inversion, which use simple scheme to correct potentials, can be used just to bring the system close to exact solution. But when you're close enough, it's opposite. Iterative Boltzmann inversion may converge slowly, but then you switch to inverse Monte Carlo method, and then you get faster convergence. And I know there is also an analogy with the renormalization group Monte Carlo method. You heard about this in the first lecture today. But it is used, for example, for in the studies of spin lattice system, and it essentially uses the same mathematical formalism. So this can be used also to compute parameters of the renormalized Hamiltonian in this approach. So how to proceed to molecular multiple site systems? The generalization is just straightforward. You have a set of site-site pair potentials. You have the corresponding set of site-site radial distribution functions. And you use the same expression. And also you include in this way intramolecular potentials as bond angles or torsions. Then this index alpha runs over all types of the potentials, including intramolecular, and within each type of potential, over all range of relevant distances or angles. Electrostatic interaction can be also included. You solve this inverse problem within some cutoff distance. Usually compute radial distribution function up to some cutoff. But if there are electrostatic interaction in the system, they usually spread outside the cutoff. That's why it's possible to specify total potential as a sum of short-range potential, which you vary in the inverse Monte Carlo method, and explicit electrostatic part, which you just treat by the usual average summation method. Now coming to some examples. And first, just test example, single-site water model can be as good a model for testing because it's really illustrates some problems which such structure-based way of deriving effective potential may face. So it's not a problem to compute. So we want to present this Phi-psi model just a spherically symmetric, single particle with spherically symmetric potential. So we compute oxygen RDF of water from any water model, and you invert it, and you get result something like, which looks something like this. This may vary a bit depending on which water model you use in the background. And really, this potential returns exactly the same radial distribution function. But the problem is that the pressure in this model will be about 9,000 bar. And energy, also evidently, potential is mostly positive, will be also positive. And chemical potential, of course, also positive. So it's not a liquid state. So there will be really problem.
Why does the energy suggest that it's not a liquid state? That perturbation function is a liquid.
If you have this potential and if you increase volume, then this system will just occupy this volume. It will not form a condensed state. It will just expand exactly as you increase the system size. It is one can say that it's compressed gas, but not the liquid. Yeah, maybe it's but definition of liquids that it keep its volume. If you increase volume, it keep volume. But if the system compresses, as soon as you increase the system size, it is in fact.
If you increase the volume enough, it'll go down. And this will as well. So it's a quantitative matter, not a qualitative matter.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, still there may be problem to use it in real simulation. For example, if you have a protein surrounded by such water, this protein will feel this pressure. So it can really induce artifacts. Anyway, at some time ago, suggested some thermodynamic correction to which one can use to correct this. So you can try to fix some thermodynamic properties, keeping the potential approximately consistent with radial distribution function. For example, for pressure correction, a number of methods were suggested. For example, it's possible to add such linear potential, and such addition affect very little on radial distribution function, but it's really reduced pressure, and you can fit it to have normal pressure. Here it was presented a way how to get pressure consistent effective potential from simulation of two-phase separated system. But another thing for what we can do, we can use inverse Monte Carlo in some invariational sense. That is, we will try to minimize this difference between computed and reference radial distribution functions under constraint conditions. For example, we keep pressure. Without constraint, this would be equivalent to standard inverse Monte Carlo. Minimum of this difference then is zero, and you can use Newton-Raphson method to find solution. However, if we introduce constraint, we should not expect that this difference can reach zero, but at least we can find some minimum value. And actually, this is a result of this minimization. The blue line is original potential, and this is corrected by the variational principle. And you see that it's actually differ quite rather little from the original potential. For comparison, this is what was pressure corrected potential obtained from simulation in phase separated system. So essentially the difference is in this part. You have here a weak attraction, but then this potential goes just parallel to each other. And really, this red potential, it's return pressure around atmospheric pressure. And RDF for these two potential coincide, in fact, within thickness of line, you do not distinguish them. But still, there is very little difference. So you can, in this way, you get pressure, consistent effective potential. Still, say, energy is a bit too high. It's became better, but it's very long to experimental. And also free energy or chemical potential, quite a bit long to experimental value. So maybe you need to use this kind of density dependent potential or other correction in order to bring also chemical potential to the experimental value. But this is work in progress. Okay. In principle, these methods can be used also to reconstruct atomistic potential from ab initio data. And we did this study for quite a while ago, computed radial distribution function from Karp Prinelli and inverted them, and we get effective atomistic potential for three-site model derived from Karp Prinelli simulation, which quite close to, say, to SPC model. On the other hand, again, the energy was not really good. On the hand, if we compare with energy coming from CPMD simulation, from the same CPMD simulation, then the difference is not much. So difference is about 4 kilojoules per mole. On the hand, we did not pursue this method because it turned out that if you improve parameters of CPMD simulations as electron mass energy cutoff simulation time, then the agreement became just worse. But it's mostly a problem of VFT theory. We also did reconstruction of atomistic potential between lithium, iron, and water, also from ab initio Karp Prinelli simulation. And this is red line, this is a result of this fitting for oxygen lithium effective short range part of oxygen lithium potential without electrostatic. Interesting that it is very well fitted by just simple exponential expression as in the Buckingham potential. And well, this potential actually quite decent behave in classical molecular dynamic simulation as shown in this work. Most of our applications of the inverse Monte Carlo concern calculation of effective solvent-mediated potentials. As you heard in the previous talk, we can simulate coarse grain model either with explicit solvent or in implicit solvent. And simulation with implicit solvent or Macmillan Meyer level of theory. Of course, in this case, you get much more saving of computer time. You reduce the number of degrees of freedom much more than if you keep the solvent. And so here we do in similar way. We compute radial distribution function from atomistic molecular dynamics, invert them, and compute implicit solvent effective potentials. This is example of sodium chloride solution. Compute radial distribution function, and this is the result for effective potentials. It's characteristic feature. It makes several oscillations, and then approach to the Coulombic potential with the electric permittivity of water. So recently, we studied how such sodium chloride potential depend on temperature. So we repeat the simulation in the whole temperature range from 0 to 100 centigrade. And here there is results for effective potentials. And this is how they change when we increase the temperature. So you see quite clear trend. However, I remember that, so this is short range potential, which includes which is difference between total potential and the electrostatic part. And the electrostatic part includes the electric permittivity. And we know that the electric permittivity depends on the temperature. So what we can do, we can try to vary the electric permittivity in order to get this potential converge to zero faster, to have most short-range potential. So in principle, we can derive effective dielectric permittivity from observation of the asymptotic behavior of the effective potentials. So when we have done this and you draw the effective potential, you see that they are mostly coincide to each other. So all practically all temperature dependence of ion-ion effective potential can be put into behavior of temperature dependent dielectric constant. And this is how, this is result how dielectric constant behave with the temperature computed in this way, and together with the experimental data for pure water and for sodium chloride solution. And here also the comparison with results of direct computation of dielectric permittivity by explicit formula with fluctuating dipoles. So this is another way of definition of effective dielectric permittivity. Next type of system is called Coarse-grain lipid model, which was shown at the beginning. So this lipid has four, we select four different groups on a lipid molecule. And four different groups, we have 10 per side-side potentials. We also have several bond potential, five bond potential, and five angle potential in this model. And we can invert them simultaneously in the inverse simulation. So in earlier work, this was done, but without angular potential and with much shorter underlying MD simulation. But recently, we computed them with running much longer simulation and also considering different concentration of lipids and also update of the charm force field for lipids. These are examples of how some of the coarse-grain potential between different sites of lipids look like. Non-bonded, these are bonded, and also angular potentials. And we made some coarse-grain simulations for lipid self-assembly. If you start from some disordered state of lipids, they gather rather fast in a small cluster, and then clusters are becoming larger and larger. So you see that first they form small micelles, then micelles collide with each other. When they become bigger, the shape of these micelles become a shape of bicelles, so you have disc-like patches of the bilayer, and they continue to each other and united and form bigger bicelles. This is just Langevin molecular dynamics simulations with the effective potential. And in the end, now you see just two bicels. And after a while, they unite and form bicel. Okay, but you see, as they form a bigger bicels, it was converted to a vesicle, just this stage in more detail. So you see that these two bicel structure, they unite and it form, it's slower, a bicel, but at some moment it's becoming torn. You see some curvature appears and they convert it to spherical vesicle. It seems that as long as the size of this bicel reached some critical size, it became unstable and it is converted to spherical vesicle. Really, and there is also some experimental data that as you have lipid assemblies of the size more than about 1,000 vesicles, they prefer to gather to spherical vesicles, but smaller system remain as a bicels. And finally, a few words about software. You can develop many different methods, but any methods can be used only if you have software which implement it. We recently make our package for your simulation more general and released it as open source software. It was done just 2 weeks ago, and this package implement inverse Monte Carlo method and also iterative Boltzmann inversion, and it can be used for computation of coarse-grain potential for infracubitry molecular system, and the code is available here. So this is web page when you can download. There's also some manuals, mail list, and it is just to use it. And a few words about the features. So this package can handle tabulated bond and angle potential and non-bonded tabulated potential between different site types in multimolecular systems. Electrostatic outside cutoff is included by the Ewald summation method. Input atomistic trajectory can be taken from Gromov, NAMT, and dynamics, or just plain XYZ format. A set it implement inverse Boltzmann and inverse Monte Carlo. Also, the feature is that it uses its own Monte Carlo engine, which is parallelized, and you can just run many Monte Carlo simulations on different processes. And it's very important to get accurate evaluation of the correlation matrix, because it's quite important in the inverse simulation to have a good computed correlation matrix. And it has also some automatic control of precision of calculation, and it's written in new version of Fortran. Actually, that's why it's not compiled with GFortran, but you need Intel Fortran or PGI Fortran to compute it. And workflow of the program is going that first you run CG tray utility, which convert your atomistic trajectory to coarse grain trajectory according to the given mapping scheme. Then it computes necessary radial distribution function for this coarse grain trajectory. And then the main block magic, it extracts interaction potential from computed radial distribution function. And we have a poster here by Alexander Mirzoyev, and he can give more details about how to use this program. And just in the end, a few current applications which are currently in progress. That for lipids, we also considering another type of lipids, phosphatidyl ethanol. I mean, it differs from PC lipids that the head group do not contain methyl groups here, but just hydrogen. And just by this reason, such lipids form inverse hexagonal phase, but not lipid bilayer. We also applying the inverse procedure in order to construct coarse grain model of an ionic liquid consisting of such positively charged cation and anion. And also in cooperation with group in Lars Nordage in Singapore, we're also applying this to study nucleosome core particle self-assembly. And actually in this simulation, this is our detail model, which is already constrained, which represents two turns of DNA wrapped around histone protein, which we call grain into such seven-site model, and for which also compute effective potential. And at some condition, if you add three valent counter ions, it really forms some compact and ordered system like here. Okay, that's all. Finally, acknowledgement of co-workers and colleague. And Alexander Mirzoyev is here, and also he greatly contributes to development of this package magic. Thank you.
The question of dielectric constant of water. You presented it in some convoluted context with fitting temperature dependence and so on. My question is, can you tell me directly, did you find the potentials using which you can computationally reproduce the dielectric macroscopic dielectric constant of water at zero frequency in macroscopic setting and so on?
Yeah, right. We did compute effective potentials and extract the electric permittivity from asymptotic behavior of these effective potentials.
And it is right. 80.
Yes.
Thank you.
You actually had a follow-up question just on this. So the temperature depends on the dielectric constant. So Did you compute the macroscopic dielectric response of a bulk system just on fluctuations of the total polarization? Does that agree with what you find?
Yes, I return to this picture. Actually, computation from asymptotic behavior are green points, and they have some spread. But still, the trend and the slope is the same as was experimental dependence. And the blue points are just what is computed by from the fluctuation of dipoles. It is direct computation from standard molecular dynamic simulations.
So, but these all contain sodium chlorine ions. So I was wondering, what I normally do is I would take a system with bulk water, no ions in it, and I would just look at the fluctuations of the polarization, just using fluctuation dissipation theorem.
But it is done with ions. But you use the same expression for dipole fluctuation, but just ignore the ions.
Okay, and that agrees with what you find from the potential.
And actually, I think previously it was done and also for ion concentrated solution, and actually mm-hmm. this way you even reproduce behavior of the electric permittivity with concentration of ions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No. A bit. Actually, the simulation were done with flexible SPC water model, and this model, because of flexibility, actually it includes some response on the change of electric, but no specific polarization as atomic polarization.
Okay, so this is not the same model as you got in your potential
field. They say no. In all the study, we use flexible SPC water model for computation of effective potentials. And actually, just this flexible SPC water has correct dielectric permittivity about 78 at normal temperature.
A short comment about the water and then a question about the membranes. So when you do this coarse graining of water by a structure-based method, which your method essentially is because you match the G of Rs, then it's known that you get a very high pressure typically, but for compressibility, right? And depending on what you do, either one might be more important, because when you correct the pressure, then your compressibility gets wrong.
Right.
So whereas you can't get both that easily. But what is more important, I think, for many, many applications is that with the two-body interactions, you fit the G of R, but you never fit the tetrahedral structure. So you don't have any orientational structure anymore in your liquid. And this one always should keep in mind when one does these kind of coarse-grained simulations of water. But otherwise, I completely agree to you. It's, from my point of view, it's a standard liquid, just under high pressure. But my question comes to your very last point. Can you say something about the bending elasticity of your coarse-grained membrane, which you get there from this aggregation, compared to the atomistic structure?
We did not measure, but in principle it is possible to do if you have this model.
Is it roughly the same or is it far off?
Just benzene elasticity, we did not make any calculations. But what we did, for example, when lipids gathered in membrane, we can evaluate average area per lipid. It is more, it's a bit low, but...
but the average area per lipid is not sufficient.
Yeah, I know. No, we did not compute it, bending rigidity.
Did you ever extend this method to optimize for three body potentials?
Yeah, in principle, it's extendable to three body potential.
But
yes.
You haven't done it yet?
Because you just need to write in some explicit form this three body term, and if you have three body correlations from atomistic simulation, you can be treat them in the same scheme. But of course, the dimensionality would increase greatly if you just have arbitrary three body interaction because it's just three dimensional function. And for cross-correlation, it means that you need to treat six-dimensional.
I was just thinking about the model of Molinaro of the tetrahedral model, and she has a three-body.
But if you introduce some simple three-body terms, for example, for interaction of angle, just which is dependent only on angle in the first hydration shell, then this can be done. This certainly can be put into the same scheme.
I also had a question about when you correct for the pressure of, for the strictly symmetric water, you add that linear term in the potential. I was wondering why not add a usual van der Waals, like r to the sixth, because I think...
No, I did not any specific potential. I just referred to previous work. But here I showed that we just vary the potential only just keeping constraint condition that the pressure is correct. But otherwise, it was changed arbitrary, just to find best possible fit to radial distribution function under condition that we have constant pressure.
How important do you think, in these various water systems, how important do you think it is to take include the fact that water could dissociate into hydronium and hydroxyl? It seems to me that's an important thing with these kind of models.
In some cases, yes, but actually concentration of hydronium ions is very low.
And it's important.
But it's important in another way, because it affects charges of ionizable groups. It changes charges of ionizable groups, and it's very important. But not that we model hydronium ions explicitly. If you have some specific pH, we have some average charge of some I can calculate what will be the charge of each specific ionizable group. And of course, changes of the charges have really affect simulations.
So it would be a gigantic system. You would have one ion pair per billion water molecules, which is quite a few.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested in these issues of the charge of surfaces of water. So you need charges. Michael? Okay, well, I think we're finished for today. We'll see everyone tomorrow.